Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to help you cut through the noise in global football. We take all the raw info news, reports, our notes, and really pull out what matters most, giving you that shortcut to being genuinely well-informed. Today, we're jumping into quite a mix. There's the transfer market, which is, well, buzzing as always. We'll look at key league action from, let's see, July 27th to August 3rd, 2025, and something really practical, a guide for getting tickets to the FIFA World Cup 2026. Yeah, our sources today are a pretty detailed football news rundown and what looks like an essential playbook for anyone hoping to snag those World Cup tickets.
Exactly. And this isn't just reading headlines back, is it? We're aiming to connect things, you know, look at the player drama here, the World Cup logistics there, and see what bigger picture emerges. Might find some surprising links, some aha moments, hopefully.
Definitely. We got some really interesting bits to unpack, like Chelsea splashing out £37 million on a young defender. Then there's a star player basically calling out his club over broken promises. Drama. And a big shift in the title race down in Brazil. Plus, yeah, those insider tips for World Cup 2026 tickets. We want you to feel like you're really in the know, so let's get started. Right, let's begin in London. Two big clubs making waves. First, Chelsea. They have landed Jorel Hato from Ajax. 19 years old, Dutch international defender, £37 million. That feels like a massive bet on youth, doesn't it? What's your take? What does this signal about Chelsea's strategy, especially at the back?
That's a great point. I mean, the fee is significant, yes, but it's more than that. It really feels like Chelsea are doubling down on building something sustainable, you know, youth-focused. Hato is genuinely seen as one of the top defensive prospects in Europe. So getting him now, at that age, it suggests they're thinking long-term, building a foundation for years, not just fixing a problem for next season.
Yeah, makes sense. And then just across town, Tottenham, they haven't been quiet either. Spurs brought in Juan Polinha from Bayern Munich. Season-long loan, but crucially, there's an option to buy him. Portuguese international defensive midfielder. Tactically, what's the real advantage here, especially doing it as a loan with an option?
Well, what jumps out with Paulinha is how neatly he fits a specific need. Spurs get that immediate defensive solidity. He's a proven ball winner in the Premier League. We know that. Tough tackler.
Yep.
Doing it on loan first. It's smart. Low risk, financially speaking, in the short term. They address a key weakness, midfield stability, without a massive upfront commitment. It's quite pragmatic, really.
Pragmatic, yeah. Okay, let's shift over to Italy. Atalanta, there's some serious tension brewing. And Emil Lookman, you know, hero of their Europa League win not long ago, he's gone public. Said in an interview he was promised he could leave if the right offer came in this summer. Now he's claiming the club's blocking a move. It just shows, doesn't it? Even at the top level, these gentlemen's agreements, they can just fall apart. Who really has the power here?
Exactly. And this kind of player-club friction over transfers, it seems to be happening more and more. It really puts the spotlight on these sort of verbal agreements.
Yeah.
Especially when a player feels let down. And it makes you wonder, how does this affect Atalanta's reputation or their future negotiations with other players?
Mm.
It's messy.
Definitely messy. Okay, so while London and Italy have these big stories, the transfer mill keeps grinding elsewhere too. We're hearing reports, pretty reliable ones, that Manchester United have put a price tag on Rasmus Højlund. Apparently, they'd consider offers around £30 million for the Danish striker. That's certainly got a few clubs interested, you'd imagine.
Yeah, that £30 million figure for Højlund is interesting. For a young striker with his profile, it's a number that makes clubs pay attention. It just shows how quickly things move. You know, one club sets a price, and suddenly other plans might change. Domino effect. And while these big names grab the headlines, remember, clubs all over, like the Bundesliga, Serie A, they're deep in preseason. It's not just about fitness. They're working on tactics, integrating smaller, maybe less flashy, but still vital signings, getting that squad depth right before things kick off.
Right, good point. It's not all about the blockbusters. Okay, while Europe's busy with transfers and preseason, let's look across the Atlantic, the Americas. MLS season is pushing towards the playoffs. Things are getting tight in the race for playoff spots, aren't they? Saw some key games this past weekend. Big results impacting the standings, East and West.
Absolutely. The MLS format, you know, conferences, playoffs, it makes this part of the season incredibly tense. Teams aren't just playing for points. They're fighting for home field advantage, maybe a slightly easier route in the postseason. And like you said, one result, one weekend can completely change the outlook for a team. Properly dramatic.
And speaking of drama, there's a new leader in Brazil. Cruzeiro are back on top in the Brazil around. They got a win, and crucially, Botafogo's keeper, John, made a really costly mistake. That combination let Cruzeiro jump back into first place.
The Brazil around title race. It just never disappoints, does it? Always so tight, so unpredictable. And that's exactly it. A single moment, a goalkeeper error like that, flipping the standings. That's pure South American football passion and unpredictability. Keeps you hooked.
It really does. Okay, shifting continents again to Africa. Nigeria just had that amazing WAFCON win last week. Huge congratulations to them. But the focus snaps right back to club football now. The preliminary rounds for the CAF Champions League and the Confederation Cup are about to start. Teams beginning that long journey.
Yeah, it's quite the quick turnaround, isn't it? From continental glory back to the club grind. It really highlights the depth of talent and just the relentless schedule in African football. These early rounds, they're vital. They set the stage for fiercely competitive tournaments, often where you see new stars start to emerge too.
Definitely. And looking ahead slightly, with the big European League starting up soon, all eyes, especially from national team managers, will be on the players. The next international break isn't that far off, maybe just over a month. Crucial World Cup 2026 qualifiers coming up. For so many players, this season is the season to cement their place for North America.
That's a really key point. And it raises that question, doesn't it? How do players manage that? Club ambitions versus national team dreams. Every single game, every performance, it's all going to be under the microscope for World Cup selection. Do you think we might see some players being a bit more cautious, maybe? Or does that World Cup ambition just push them even harder, maybe even risking injury or burnout?
That's a fascinating dilemma for them, isn't it? And it leads us perfectly into maybe the most practical bit of our deep dive today, actually getting tickets for the FIFA World Cup 2026. Look, for millions, going to a World Cup is just a dream. But maybe for you listening, it could be real. We've looked at this guide. Seems pretty definitive on how to navigate what's going to be the toughest ticket scramble ever, probably. This isn't just fluff. It feels like a proper companion guide. Cuts through the confusion, takes the official FIFA info, and makes it actionable.
Yeah, and what really struck me about this guide is the strategic angle. Like, it really hammers home why having a Visa card is, well, basically essential for that first ticket draw phase. That feels like proper insider info. It can genuinely give you an edge right at the start, a massive advantage in what's essentially a lottery.
Right, and okay, say that first draw doesn't work out, there's a backup plan. The guide highlights the official hospitality program, says it's a guaranteed way to get tickets. More expensive, obviously, different experience, but it guarantees you're there. Important safety net.
It also digs into some specifics, tailored opportunities. Things like special ticket allocations for people living in the host countries, US, Canada, Mexico. And even allocations for fans of specific qualified teams. That's really valuable intel if you fit into those categories. Gives you another potential route.
Good point. And finally, it talks about security, confidence, you know, navigating the official resale market safely, laying out the do's and definitely the don'ts. How to avoid getting ripped off by unofficial sellers.
Yeah.
It sounds like planning a military operation just to get tickets.
Huh. It kind of does, doesn't it? A strategic campaign for fans. But, I mean, the prize being at a World Cup match live, probably worth all that planning.
Absolutely. So, wow, we've covered a lot of ground today. From the heat of the transfer market to the strategy of getting World Cup tickets, quite the journey. We talked about those big European moves. Chelsea's £37 million for Hato, a real youth statement. Spurs getting Polina on loan, smart business. Then the player power struggles, like Lookman versus Atalanta. And the league action heating up Cruzeiro back on top in Brazil after that Botafogo slip-up. Plus, preseason grind in Europe and CAF competitions kicking off in Africa.
And critically, we walk through those practical steps for World Cup 2026 tickets. Remember the key takeaways. That Visa card advantage for the first draw. The hospitality program, as you're guaranteed, if pricey, backup. And knowing about those special allocations for host residents, for team fans. Plus, how to use the official resale platform safely. Real practical stuff.
Definitely. Okay, let's leave you with something to chew on. A thought beyond what we covered directly. Considering all this transfer activity we just discussed, and with those crucial World Cup qualifiers looming, what does this next season really mean for players fighting for their national team places? How will that pressure, that individual ambition to get to the World Cup, affect how they play for their clubs? It feels like a season where personal goals and club loyalty might really clash, shaping careers and national team fortunes on that road to 2026. Something to think about. Your journey to understanding the game and maybe even being there for its biggest moment starts now.